Well, hello and welcome to What's With Crapples, the podcast for all that crap we love to talk about on ye old bras. Ding! I'm Ronnie. That's my little Benuni tunes over there. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Ronnie. How are you?
Good. How are you feeling today, you handsome bastard?
I'm feeling much better. Thank you, everyone, for the concern. I attempted to put myself on vocal rest over the weekend, but of course, I wound up chattering away because that's my nature, but I am feeling a lot better. I'm still like a little stuffed, but it's one of those things, you know, in a cold where like, you know, when you're stuffed and you're coughing, but you feel fine. So I'm at that stage, and I apologize to anyone if a cough escapes and I cough directly into your ears. I apologize. I'm going to try really hard to mute myself.
Okay. Well, today is a very good... Okay. Well, you know, that's a lot to unpack.
That's a lot of information.
Okay.
Lot
Guys, of information. Ben might cough at you. Today is a very special episode. We are talking to the Brav Bros, who I've been calling the Bravo Bros, because, like, honestly, who reads anymore? You know what I mean? Like, who puts letters together properly anymore? Once I get something in my head, it just stays that way for years. And that's what happened with those two. Those guys, so talented, fun, really cool guys. That's coming up in a moment. But first, we finally have an announcement. The Golden Crappies. Did you think we just were going to quit doing the Golden Crappies because Bravo tried to out-crappy us on their own network? Oh, no. Oh, no. Ben, take it away.
Okay, everyone. Here is the news. Okay, the 2024 Golden Crappies are going to happen on February 17th in Los Angeles again this year. Okay, it's going to happen at the Palace Theater in downtown Los Angeles. And basically, here is what you need to know. Tickets are going on sale Wednesday, January 10th at 10 a.m., local, which I believe means 10 a.m. Pacific time, but you know, I don't know what local means. Maybe that means 10 a.m. for everyone's time zones. Try it, see what you can do. But the point is, tickets are on sale January 10th, Wednesday. However, if you are a Patreon member, you are going to have access to tickets. You may already have access to tickets. We are doing a Patreon presale Monday, January 8th, that starts at 1 p.m. local. May have already started, not sure when this is going up. And it's going to continue until 10 p.m. Tuesday, January 9th. If you don't buy your tickets before 10 p.m., you're going to have to wait for the general on sale. So that's all the news. I mean, it's exciting. And we're really excited to do this show, The Crappies. It's been a wild year on Bravos ever since The Crappies. I kind of think like The Crappies were like the end of innocence because ever since The Crappies, we had Scandoval, we had Reality Vantis, we've had everything, everything. So let's celebrate the year that was. Come join us in Los Angeles, February 17th, Palace Theater.
Yes, and Crappy Hour.
And link in our bio, and link in our on our website, yes. All that stuff.
On Instagram, website, whatever. Go there, link in bio, or on Watch What Crappens, there's a ticket link right there for you to come.
But also, the Watch What Crappens ticket link will not go up until Wednesday. So it's right now, it's only on Patreon.
Also, I forgot what my also was. So who cares? Okay, everybody. Crappy Hour is back this week, which is on Instagram Live. Follow us on Instagram because that is where we ask your help with nominating things or what your ideas for nominations, etc. are. So participate, won't you? Also, Crappy Hour is our live show where we talk to you every other Monday, 5:30 Pacific time. And that's what we're doing tonight, okay? If you're not listening to this on Monday, January 8th, you can still listen to the audio or watch the video on Crappens On Demand on Patreon. Okay, that's enough advertising or shit. These guys, we have been hearing about these guys for a really long time. I mean, they splashed on the scene. I see them all the time. They're social people. People are great, by the way. I don't even know who's doing that. If they do that themselves, we should have asked them that. That's neither here nor there. It's probably not to talk about on the show. But, you know, I watched them on the TikTok. Okay. That's where I discovered them, where all the youth discover things. And so I've been watching their opinions for a long time on TikTok. And you guys have been asking us to talk to them, to meet with them. And finally, we fucking did it. I mean, my God, let's not wait any longer. Now, here we are with Steel and Shooter of the Brav Bros. Give it a listen, why don't you? Thanks for being here, everybody. Enjoy the show.
All right, here we are with Shooter and Steel. Hello, boys.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thrilled to be
good. And we're Ben and Ronnie for your listeners who may not know us. I'm Ben. That's Ronnie.
Dan and Lonnie, what's up, dudes?
Yes, thank you. I'm an idiot. And you know what else? I've been calling you Bravo Bros for how long have you guys been around? 2 years? Almost two years now,
but that's fine because everybody calls us Brav Bros, Bravo Bros, Brav Boys, Bravo Boys, yeah. Pretty much any variation. We're just going to have to trademark them all just to make sure that we're all clear across the board.
You definitely
Wait, you guys
should.
Are Bravo Boys?
Or no, actually, they're Brav Bros. Brav
See,
Boys.
It's already happening.
Brav Bros. I thought you were Brav Bros. Is that what
they're
it is?
They're Brav Bros. That's yes, exactly but right. I okay. say Bravo Bros because I watch you guys on TikTok. So you don't start your TikToks off like, hey, we're the Brav Bro that just starts with whatever you're talking about. And you know, once I get something in my hand,
like that either.
We do.
Hey, the Brav Bros coming at you,
the Brav Bros.
So, congratulations to you guys. You guys have been killing it, and you know, at some point, you got to leave the house and meet the neighbors. I mean, what the hell? How have we not reached out or gotten to know each other yet? Let's have a beer,
well,
bro.
You know, it's one of those things. Like, we get consistently. Not compared. I think that we're your straight counterparts, according to a lot of our listeners. We get a lot of that. It's like, watch what happens with straight guys. I'm like, I'll take that. I think more so, you know, seeing you guys at the top of the charts frequently, it's a little daunting to reach out to people sometimes. So I was like, I'll just wait, you know, I'll bide my time. And then when everything started happening and we heard the shout out on your show, which thank you guys very much. And I thought, maybe we should reach out and see if they'd be interested in a collab, but we're huge fans of yours. Obviously we've been listening to you guys for a while. We reference you guys a lot. So the fact that you wanted to have us on is incredible. So thank you guys so much for the opportunity to chat with you today.
God, oh my God. Yeah. Of course. And you know what you guys have achieved the real dream, which is that you had some sort of impact on a TV show. Like who is the husband or boyfriend who was on your show that they referenced in the flashback on that episode?
Chris Bassett.
Right, Chris Bassett. Yeah. See, you guys made it into a flashback reference, you know, of like tabloid gossip. That's like the dream. We've never been able to do that.
We honestly heard from Bravo over the summer that we were going to be featured and they had to sign all the release forms, make sure that we can see our faces and everything. I thought it would have been funnier if we were blurred out and they just showed Chris Bassett out there. But yeah, obviously we want to show our faces out there. And we weren't sure when it was going to happen. And then obviously we're, you know, 6-7 episodes into the season. The season's kind of dragging along. We're getting kind of bored. And we're like, are we ever going to be in this show, as they said over the summer? And it just kind of happened. And neither of us really we tend to not watch live anyway. We watch on Peacock the next day because we can't stand commercials. So we'll wait. And then all of a sudden our phones are blowing
up. That is so straight guy of you, by the way. To not even be able to fast forward the fucking commercial like
commercials,
especially Sunday night too, because there's football on, so we're watching football on Sunday
okay.
And then we'll watch our Bravo the next day, but our phones start blowing up Sunday night. And then obviously you guys mentioned us on Monday, which I thought was such a funny clip because again you called us the Bravo Bros, but that's how things work. Between people calling me Scooter and Sluter, whatever the hell you want to say, anything that rhymes the shooter usually works. That and Bravo Bros, they go synonymous. It's perfect.
Well, I intro every show with a new nickname for Shooter. Like last night, it was Rootin' Tootin' Scootin' Magootin'. So you can do any variant. As long as it's close to Shooter, you can call him whatever you want. It's kind of fun.
I'm basically like a dog. If it rhymes with my name, I'll respond.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. That's it's like a blank canvas, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Shooter is definitely a name that I feel like works really well for like a straight guy podcast. I think if it was on a gay podcast, it would have a whole other situation going on.
Yeah,
it could have a different meaning. Sure, it could,
yeah.
It's my username on Grindr.
Another dream that you guys have accomplished is when you Google you. Something comes up that's like, they're straight in all caps from Bravo and Blaze, a post from when you guys did Bravo and Blaze.
Just to make sure everybody knows, all right? Just so you know for sure, we made sure the first thing is these dudes are straight.
Like that shit is hilarious. And that is also my dream. I just want someone to be like, he's straight! But like in the gayest all caps ever.
He's straight! Just name this episode that, and then people will start saying it.
Yeah, okay.
We could do that. So we have joined forces today, really for something that's like bigger than all of us, which is the State of the Union for Salt Lake City. Like Salt Lake City had such a huge, huge finale last week, that even the esteemed Jennifer Lawrence last night at the Golden Globes told Entertainment Tonight that she, you know, started talking about the finale, started saying receipts, proof, timelines, screenshots. She started doing the whole thing. This thing is like bursting at the seams, about to take, it's about to get to that next level where people who don't watch Housewives are going to start asking us questions about it. So, but it does ask a very important question, which is, what is the state of the Salt Lake City Housewives? What do we think is going to happen at the reunion? What do we think the future is for Monica and the women? There's just so many pressing questions, and it required a summit.
I completely agree. It was astounding to watch it transpire, and it's one of those things that I was nervous about because we had so much buildup last year about the Black Eye and Jen Shaw and all that nonsense, and we get to the end of the season and the big reveal doesn't happen. It was just all this buildup for nothing, and to focus around a storyline like that for so long, I thought that the reveal at the end of this season was going to be what we've already seen, and that's that Monica sued Heather for botched lip injections, and that's the big thing. I think everybody was kind of going that route because we get teed up by Bravo frequently where we're like, oh, here comes the big reveal, and it's this massive letdown. So for this to hit, and not only hit with one thing, but with they dropped the Black Eye in there out of nowhere in the perfect way, because we had talked previously, if they bring up this stupid Black Eye and that's the big reveal as well, I'm going to be furious. But to drop it in there like a little cherry on top after outing Reality Von Teese was just cinema. It was
plus
cinema. That wasn't
physical
TV.
Abuse.
Yeah,
and
right?
Not only that, but abuse.
It was perfect. The way that they did it was perfect. To watch Heather have this comeback season after her disaster last year trying to defend Jen.
Oh, man. People were pissed last year. And rightly so, because, like you said, they not only dragged that on forever, they dragged it through the entire three-part reunion of two. And we never found out who gave her that damn black eye. And then she was so tricky about it. She's like, well, that, you know, first it was like, I forgot. And then she was like, we all know. And then you can guess. It's like, you can't, I don't think you can do that with black eyes, right?
Yeah. No. And then it trickled over to Girls Trip. Like, it even went to a whole other franchise and it became a storyline over there too. And by the time it was on Girls Trip, I was like, I am done with this. This is like a very annoying storyline. Let's never see it again.
Yeah, we were done with it, honestly, in the moment, and we could not get past it. It got to the point where we were even blaming that stick tree that was in her room, saying that maybe she just got drunk and she walked into the stick tree and it poked her in the eye, and she's really embarrassed and she doesn't want to tell anyone about it, so she's making up this whole storyline. I mean, it was brutal, but I want to ask you guys, because we got a lot of comments. I had a theory about, you know, whether or not Bravo knew about Reality Von Teese and Monica's association. There were a lot of people that commented on it and said, we knew this weeks before. We knew that Monica was associated with it. Steele and I try to, obviously we have to report on the news when it comes out, but we try to block out some of that because at the end of the day, it's entertainment and we don't want spoilers. If it's a drama series, if I'm watching, say, any of the shows that I really liked and somebody spoiled it before I got a chance to watch it, I'd be pissed. It wouldn't hit the same way. So I try to actively avoid that. How do you guys navigate those waters when it comes down to the rumors that are flying around before a finale?
Specifically the rumors and the nastiness.
Yes.
I'm a little bit more like you. I kind of want to enjoy the show, like the show that they've created, that they've edited. I kind of want to enjoy and just like take it on. And then maybe I'll look at gossip afterwards, but like, it's not Game of Thrones. So like, I'm okay to look at gossip. I don't know if I seek it out really intensely, but like, you know, I'll see it around and I'll maybe follow some things. If I get really like whipped up about a topic, I will then do lots of Googling. But usually I'm like you, I just sort of like to go with the flow and see what happens. But Ronnie is much more involved.
Oh, I have nothing to do. Like, I literally don't do anything. I went to Home Goods today before the show and I'm literally exhausted. Okay. I carried in like one tiny little lamp. I don't even need. That's like all I did. I'll talk about that all week. My experience there.
Hey, Home Goods trips are taxing. Okay. You look at multiple items. You're like, will this fit in there? Do I want it in there? Maybe not. Maybe I'll come back for it. Can I come back?
I was
back?
In there
are
with a measuring tape.
Okay.
I was like, yeah, because I don't have a sense of scale like that.
Well, then you have to go back and get a cart because you have 15 things in your hands. And you're like, I didn't want a cart in the first place. I didn't need all this stuff. Then you go back and get the cart. It is
there's goddamn tchotchkes at checkout. You got to pick up the tchotchkes at checkout.
Of course. Look, I got this lamp. Do I need this? I don't need this. Look, this is my lamp. We're on video if anybody needs it. It's like a little lamp. You know,
I think it's cute. Art Deco.
Yeah, like a little art. I don't need it. It doesn't really go with anything. Anyway, the point is, I have no life, okay? I'm going to stare at this lamp and just be proud of this.
I have a lamp $10 over there also.
I'm, going to be so proud of this lamp. But I don't do anything. And so I lie in bed. And I looked that up the other day, the difference between lie and lay, because that's how little that's really I do.
Lay is actually the past tense, right? Isn't that
no? Lay is a thing. Like if you lay something down, it's an object. Like I laid down this gigantic, supersized thing of Trident on the desk, but I lied down. So anyway, I don't do anything. So I get really obsessed. I mean, it goes back to the days of like Yolanda on Beverly Hills with her Lyme's disease and people questioning that. I know everything about the difference between Lyme and chronic Lyme. The dates of her posts of when she was in a bikini and when she was, I follow all that shit. I love the conspiracy part of it, but even I didn't know about the Bravo or not Bravo and Blaze. Sorry, Bravo and Blaze. Hi. But I didn't know about the, Reality Montese thing until I think 2 weeks before when, the assistant posted it, Jen's, Murillo posted it, which I thought was really shitty, Murillo. Okay. Like, I get that you're on Jen's side, but they did such a good job of keeping this shit secret on the show, which is so rare for Housewives, and to be spoiled by you little clutch stealer.
I was glad. I missed that entirely. So I was not spoiled by that, but I was a little spoiled about the black eye only because Andy Cohen had said on Watch What Happens Live that there would be an answer about the black eye later in the season. And I hadn't even seen Andy say that. But then, of course, people started posting that clip like tonight's the night. We're going to find out. So I think on some level, I was kind of prepared for that reveal. And when Heather was teeing up for it, I could sense it coming. And it was still great when it landed. But man, I could only imagine how amazing it would have been to just not have expected it whatsoever.
Let me tell you, it was amazing. It was incredible when she dropped it because I had no clue. And as far as that Marulo guy goes, he's driving me crazy. The clout chasing that's happening right now on the tail end of this whole thing is annoying. Yeah. It's irritating. He's doing 16 interviews trying to give his 2 cents. It's like, look, we get what you're doing. You're not doing this to vindicate Jen Shaw. You're doing this for your 15 minutes of fame. And it's getting kind of annoying. And to your point, it drives me nuts when people reveal stuff. I get that that's part of being, you know, in the Bravo game, like these Bravo sleuths out there like to uncover all this crazy information. And sometimes it's interesting, but sometimes it takes away from the show. Like you don't get this amazing reveal at the end of the season that this is one of the best finales in Bravo history, period.
Yeah.
And you don't get that if people start to spoil stuff. And I don't understand, I guess it comes back to clout chasing, but to see that all happen organically, because I didn't do any digging and I don't do as much. Shooter will keep an ear to it, like just the temperature as to what's going on as far as like the chatter happening. I really don't. I try to keep myself sequestered in a bubble, not a Dorit bubble, a much nicer bubble that I can.
Love bubble.
Can we check on the woman in the pool, by the way? love bubble. I'm in Teresa. Me and Shooter are in our own little love bubble. But by doing that, it makes these shows so much more enjoyable to watch because that reveal was electric. That whole moment, Heather, the wind's blowing her hair. Do I think it took multiple takes? I do. I don't think that was all organic. Like Meredith's reactions are already the best, but in this moment when she's like, why do they keep doing this to us? I was like, how many tries did that take?
It's time for a commercial. It's time for a Crappens commercial.
I was very offended when I heard you saying that on your show that you
think
that this cast does multiple takes. How dare you? You guys are like, this is so scripted. This is the improv community theater. Of course, they script it in their head, but I don't even think they stop. I don't think they're like, you know what? Let's do that again. I think they literally just improvise for 20 hours.
And they just cut it down to something that was good. Yeah.
Just look at everything Whitney does. Like Whitney, every time Whitney talks, it is definitely the product of like 20 hours of improvisation edited down for TV.
Well, that's actually a good point, too, because if you're thinking, I'm going to have to go back and rewatch, because when it started, the sun was barely setting. And by the time they were done, I think it was pretty dark on the beach. So, yeah, they were probably out there for an hour and a half, 2 hours, just kind of filing through and trying to get the best reaction shots.
Yeah. Did anyone watch the finale a second time, or just like have like a victory lap with the finale? Because I definitely did Saturday night, and I put up a poll on my Instagram because I was bored and being like frenzied, and I was like, "Who else is watching this tonight?" And 75% said yes.
I've definitely watched on TikTok, which I do all the time. I'll just watch 15 to 20 minutes of a show that I've already watched, and I did that maybe 4 or 5 different times with Salt Lake. Yeah. Yeah. So that I think that counts.
The reactions on TikTok have been actually so incredibly fun. Watching what people have been doing with the show, like what parts take off. You know, there was one guy who was kind of doing like this undulating dance to like Receipts Proof Timeline. He was like, Receipts Proof Timeline. It was kind of amazing. I watched it like 10 times.
I think the more interesting thing is what you referenced earlier with Jennifer Lawrence. And we're seeing something happen now that we haven't seen since Scandoval and hadn't seen until Scandoval happened, where it's starting to extend past the Bravo universe. And now we're just getting into popular culture. And that's when it gets really fun. I mean, like you said, there's going to be a million people coming to us now like, hey, what about this? I just heard about this. Should I watch the show? Blah, blah, blah. But I like generating this kind of buzz around Bravo because it only helps everybody involved with Bravo, content creators, Bravo itself. It only pushes it further. So I love when popular culture gets involved as a whole, because then you see funny stuff come out like the TikToks, and you see celebrities referencing different things and making reference to the actual show, quoting the show. There's something about the community growing like past just our normal people that we discuss this with that makes it more entertaining. And I think that what I'm nervous about is, because this was such a successful finale and because this hit so well, I want them to be able to replicate this in an organic way throughout the other shows. And I don't know, like, this has set the bar for me, and maybe that's not a good thing, but this is what I want from finales now. I want my jaw on the floor. I want to be taken aback. I don't think Potomac has that kind of star power. I don't think they can deliver that kind of finale. I don't think a lot of these shows can right now. And that's what makes me just a little bit nervous that Bravo now has this formula where it's like, wow, this was fucking great. We need to redo this somehow, push the narrative a little too hard. And then we see some other shows trying to hit that mark and not quite getting there, falling short. And instead of investigating further into what their drama is organically, trying to push harder to get this big reveal at the end of the season that inevitably gets spoiled across the board. So it's I'm a little wary moving forward because this was so good.
My brain. Don't be wary. Listen, this is like Jesus. You just have to have faith. Your worry does not mean that Jesus is not going to still know how to turn water into wine. He's Jesus. That's what he does. It's not going to be the same, but they always come through. And like Potomac is one of those that this season we're all shitting on Potomac, I think. Just not really as commentators, but as an audience, because they've lifted it so high. They've lifted that bar so high. They're so funny. Every season has been good. I mean, their weakest seasons have been good. And then this season, it's just like, it's kind of like a wet fart. I don't even like that word, but it's kind of like a wet blanket with farts on it. And it's frustrating. You're like, how are they not? They've got all the same things going on. They've got the same personalities mostly. What's the problem? And it's that there is nothing really fresh, you know? But Potomac's
nothing fresh. None of them are friends.
That's the biggest problem when it comes to Potomac versus Salt Lake. I think the reason that Salt Lake hits so well is because at least the core four are pretty close, and Reality Von Teese did do them dirty. So they had a common interest when it came out that Monica was behind it, so they could all feel scorned together. So we felt that a little bit more as an audience. Like Steele was just saying with Potomac, they're not friends. They don't hang out with each other outside of the show. We get a couple of clips of them. Maybe it's Ashley and Giselle might hang out here and there, but you don't have any of those core issues. There's not a lot that they have that's similar with each other. There's not a lot of commonalities. So when they're not on camera together, they don't really have anything in common. So we're not really seeing any of that. It's not organic. Everything is for the show. And we feel that as an audience, whereas Salt Lake, everybody felt what they felt, that core four felt at the time on that beach. So that's why I feel like it hit a lot harder.
But I think also, like, Potomac right now, like, what I think the biggest issue is that there is a really insurmountable divide that's happening that's been caused by Giselle and Candace. Like, they have, like, a real beef that's, like, a real beef. Like, that's, like, I don't know how they would ever mend those issues. And, like, having to film around that's very difficult. And when you have that in a group, it's just, it's hard. You know there are issues about not wanting to film with this person or that person. And with Salt Lake City, the reason I think why the twist also landed so well was because you had actually an excellent season leading up to it. And you also had a twist that also answered something from a previous season, which is always a benefit. But I don't know if that finale would have been quite as good if the season had been shoddy, you know. But like, as it was an amazing season that we're all invested in. And the finale was an outgrowth of it. It wasn't just like, oh, here was a one-off episode. Like, if we never had Angie and Meredith having a really silly feud all season long, then there would not have been a story about Greek Mafia DMs. And if there weren't Greek Mafia DMs, then Heather might not have been kind of spooked by that. And then Heather might not have, like, gone farther with her investigation. So everything, like, the best seasons on Bravo, every episode grows out of the previous one and builds and builds and builds. And I think that's, when that happens, that is truly lightning in a bottle. I don't know if Bravo can just, like, manufacture a twist. It doesn't just, you can't just, like, make them happen because they're real people's lives. But God, I hope they do, because it was great.
Do you think that Bravo knew? Do you think Bravo knew?
Hey, that's what I just wrote down. Look,
well, that's our theory.
Yes, I do. Yes,
we think that they did too. We think that they knew ahead of time that Monica was behind it. And obviously, there's a couple different people, but Monica is going to be the head of that spear. She's the only one who can really do it. I think the Bravo knew. Steele's come around to it as well. I want to know what you guys think, if you guys want to dig a little deeper into that, since you just wrote it down in your notebook.
Yeah, that was my next question to ask you. I do, because you'd kind of brought that up earlier. I do think that they knew. And the reason is because they were sent, Jen sent a cease and desist to Monica, Koa, and someone named Savannah Gonzalez, allegedly. I saw that on Twitter. I was like, who's Miss Gonzalez? So I spent an hour looking on Twitter. So, or not Twitter, TikTok. And then I looked her up.
After Home Goods.
Yes. And that's why I had to go to Home Goods. I was like, give up Savannah Gonzalez. Get out of
here. He was sitting
house.
On a couch at Home Goods, just going through all of that.
But they do, Koa and Monica do still follow the Savannah Gonzalez. So I was like, maybe it is. Because that's not like a name you hear every day, you know? So anyway, I don't know who she is. I haven't figured that out yet. But the cease and desist was to all of them. And it wasn't Monica Garcia, actually. I think it was Monica Fowler, because, you know, she's got like many different aliases.
Same date of birth, at least, but she's got a couple different names.
Yeah, she's got a few.
But that was 2021 is when that cease and desist was sent out. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always like Mr. naive or whatever. I think, well, I think it's possible that Jen Shaw sent that off, and there was a cease and desist, and they may have seen it at one point. No one thought anything of it beyond that, and I don't know. I think a lot of times.
How did Jen not tell them? I mean, she worked for Jen. It was somebody coming for Jen, and she released the video of Koa. That's what the cease and desist was for. It was that.
How did Jen know about Reality Vontees?
I don't know.
It's a good question. Maybe she saw the video and put two and two together that Jen or Monica would be the only one with access to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Monica let it slip.
But Monica allegedly hacked into the system, right?
So, no, Monica supposedly, according to Murillo, Monica was the one who had those cameras installed in the office, and she knew the password, so she didn't even have to hack worked there, I guess. And this is, you know, who knows? Hack. Who knows what's true? Because you can't really believe anybody on this show. I mean, the witnesses are Murillo, Tanisha, and who else is talking a lot? Koa. So they've all got, you know, a lot of reasons to say whatever. And production, who believes production? Everyone's like, well, production said that they didn't know. You believe production? It's no. Bravo production. Their job is to lie to your ass.
Yeah. Well, here's the only reason why I feel like production might not have known, because it does seem like production would know. But I actually feel like Bravo is really protective about their brand in terms of a certain well, I was going to say that they like the people on their shows to have a certain amount of wealth or whatever. I mean, obviously Monica was not a wealthy cast member. Every now and then they allow a poor on, but she was associated with Jen Shah. I feel like Monica, I don't feel like Bravo. The reason why I don't think Bravo would do this, or if they knew about it, that they would continue to go forward with it, is that they could see a potential divide happening and it would be an issue for the cast. And like, it's just like bad. It might be bad juju. I don't know. I just feel like I imagine corporate not being down to bring a troll on. They're already very, you know, interacting with Bravo already. They are very protective about their talent. And so I don't think that.
Right.
That,
but just a counterpoint, corporate and production are two different things.
Well,
production,
that's fair.
Corporate's that's not going to know what production's doing necessarily.
That's
fair, I also
actually
think that it's not necessarily a negative that they did it. And like, I love diving into the comments now where people are like, this is insane. This is the downfall of Bravo. They're inviting these kinds of people on the show. Next thing you know, everyone's going to be infiltrating and blah, 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 which is not true. But I think that they had to have known to a certain extent, or maybe their angle was, all right, well, she's going to have some dirt on Jen, so let's bring her on because she can push that narrative a little bit. I just find it hard to believe that if there was a cease and desist, if there was prior knowledge to this at all, that Bravo is completely in the dark about Reality Von Teese. I know they're claiming that they were, but to not even have an inkling that it might be her, and maybe that's all it was. Maybe like, oh, maybe she is behind it. Wouldn't it be fun if it comes out on the show? Like there's a lot of different levels to it, to which how much did they actually know? But I think that the idea that they had no clue, I don't know if I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, what's crazy to me is that, so Ronnie and I, we do an Instagram show every 2 weeks where we just talk about Bravo stuff and crappy hour. And I swear this is not actually just a plug, not a blatant plug, but when we prepare for the show, we have like a shared photo sort of thing on like Apple
iCloud.
Photos.
It's called iCloud. Let's give Steve his props.
In the cloud.
Steve, so there's great like, job, Steve.
Steve
so
Jobs.
We have like, what will happen is a lot of times like Ronnie will take screenshots on his phone and just put them on the clouds. That way I can see them and be like, hey, this is what I thought was interesting. So yesterday I was going through it because I was like, I'm going to add something today. And as I was going through it, I saw that Ronnie had a screenshot from Reality Von Teese in December. And this was where Meredith, the first day of the trip, where Meredith is like wasted and Reality Von Teese like regrams or retweets a photo of Meredith kind of passed out and is like, or maybe it's benzos, whatever. And I was like, what's crazy is that like Monica was like continuing to troll the women as Reality Von Teese after she had been outed by them several months earlier. And I was like, this is kind of wild.
Not only that, she actually, according to a TikTok I saw, so there's the Reality Von Teese 2 on Instagram, which started a long time ago, but then the Reality Von Teese on Twitter didn't start tweeting about them until the day they shot the reunion. The day they shot the reunion was apparently November 20th, and that's when the Twitter one started coming after them. That's from I don't have it. I have stuff like for crappy hour just because I didn't want to like start getting yarn out with like little
right,
you know, on the pin border for you guys. But
I think that makes sense because that's the sweet spot. Like we as the public, we don't know that Monica's behind it, but everybody on the show knows and everybody in Bravo knows. So this is the time that she can really just do and say whatever the hell she wants for at least that month.
Yes.
Until we find out. And obviously Steele and I were tracking it too. We looked to see how many followers Reality Von Teese had before the finale and
same.
Then after. And it went up. I don't even know what it's at right now, but it went up close to 10,000 followers. Easily.
Oh, I took a photo and it was at 6,000. Because we had the screener, so it hadn't hit like it was about 2 hours before it went live. And I took a screenshot. I was at like around 6,000, and now last time I looked, it was at like 50,000.
Wow!
Jeez. Oh yeah, they're massive,
and that's not surprising.
This is like, going this to
make she wanted yeah, exactly. So even if, and we'll talk about that next, because I don't think that there's a future with Monica on this show.
That's the big question.
Just because she's going to be alienated, these women aren't going to want to film with her. Mm. Although, no, I'm actually battling myself right now. We've seen it in the past. You can do whatever the hell you want, and they'll still film with you, and they'll still make it. Like we've got Tom Sandoval's out there. Everybody's okay with him now. We're going to see in VPR next season. They're going to be filming with them. They're going to be doing whatever because you know what? He made them rich. So at the end of the day, are they really going to be that upset with him? It's not that different, because next year everybody's going to want to see how Monica assimilates back into the group. We're going to watch Salt Lake.
There's going to be assimilate.
But the fact that she's continuing to troll them on Reality Vantees, that's the thing that makes me feel like she's not coming back. Because if she got an indication like, we can't bring you back, then she's going to be like, fuck it, I'm going back to trolling. But like, if they're like, we're bringing you back, but you have to stop this Reality Vantees because this is a cast member. This is actually an HR issue for us now. So I'm so curious to see how this shakes out, because the one thing is that I know the women are like adamant that they are not going to film with her. But I also feel like Heather Gay is extremely shrewd and she's extremely media savvy. And I think if Bravo sits her down and says, look, I know you hate her guts. I know she committed the ultimate betrayal and she's an internet troll, but also look at what this is doing for the show. And like, it's either going to play out not on the show or it can play out on the show. So like, what, do the smart thing. And I think that will like respond. Like, I think that will connect with Heather. I think she'll be in, and then everyone else will follow. I think Meredith will be a tough one, but they will drag her into it. And then she'll spend the whole season shrugging and looking away from Monica. I got nothing to say to her, and it'll work.
It's been interesting to watch it, because part of it, like her going on Reality Vantees again and torturing everybody once she was outed on the show, she also didn't really know how the world was going to react to this. Like, she did that big photo shoot that all of this came out on the show. She was like, I'm Reality Vantees, and like holding up the big newspaper Kinko prints, where she's like really being sexy and starting the newspaper on fire and all of that stuff. So in her mind, she was kind of a hero, you know, and that's the thing about Monica. She's like a loose cannon, and I don't think she really knew how people were going to react. I think she's shocked at how much pushback she's actually gotten from people. My first reaction when I saw it was like, okay, that's bad. But I had read that she, you know, like I told you, I'd read the Murillo post, so I knew that. I knew, but also I was like, I've been telling you guys Monica's crazy this whole time, and she really has that, like, but she has a narcissistic mother. And then so everybody's like, how dare you? You obviously don't know what it's like. And it's like, well, that's not taking away from her being an asshole, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, she still seems like completely loco on her own. But I think she was really shocked. And I'm shocked after, because our reaction was just the initial reaction. But then seeing all this stuff coming out online, like how bad it was. I mean, she really was stalking Jen Shah. She was literally sitting in front of her house,
videoing it.
Yeah, I think that also is an issue why she might not come back. Like, she did sort of like, she crosses lines. I think
she
actually
broke the
reaction
a little bit.
Broke the law. I think the audience has actually been more supportive of Monica than I would expect. Like, every time I go onto Twitter, a lot of responses have been like, yeah, well, face it. They supported someone who wanted fraud, and she, you know, without Monica, there would be no season 4. Like, she has had, there are a lot of people that are viewing her kind of like a Robin Hood, you know, and like, I feel like she's actually had a lot of support. I think it may be waning a little bit as more and more tawdry details are coming out, like the video with her mom and the stuff about did she hack setting up those cameras and whatever. But then there's like a feeling of like, yeah, I'll steal from the rich, it's great. And but what's interesting to me is that I don't feel like the audience, it's refreshingly not a situation where people are like Team Monica, Team Heather, you know, like you don't have to take a side and then have to like get yelled at because you took a side. I think everyone's like really enjoyed both, like, because as much as people are loving Monica, people are loving the way, like, every single thing Heather did, people are loved. She had like 3 different speeches in that show, and everyone loved all 3 of them.
She gave like a coach's speech at the end got me all riled up.
Right.
Yeah, dude. She's like, if you think you can, we've been through everything together. If you think you can come in here and take us down, these 4, we are resilient, blah, blah, blah. I was like, fuck yeah. Like, let's go. It was a great speech.
The core 4. Commercials. Here comes one right now. So whose team were you guys on before you found all this stuff out? Because obviously the internet has completely changed its mind once we found this out. But what did you guys believe with the Meredith stuff? And that's also another reason I wasn't that surprised. Like, if we're supposed to believe that Meredith does this all the time to the point where they're like, Meredith, come on, Meredith, just stop. If you want to have lunch with us, stop making these fake accounts. They've kind of normalized it on this show to the point where I'm like, why am I supposed to care? Anyway, the point is, what did you? Whose side were you on with that whole Meredith
thing? The thing about Meredith is, one, Monica being behind Reality Von Teese does not exonerate Meredith. It doesn't mean that she's not still sending DMs and trying to get other people in trouble and spread rumors. She could still be doing that. It's just not through Reality Von Teese. But I feel like people are mistaking that and going back and forth like, wait, how are you guys still on Meredith's case? We just saw that Monica was the one who did it. No, we saw Monica was doing it in a much bigger way, but Meredith is still probably doing it. Let's be honest. So we were firmly on, I don't want to speak for Steele, but we were firmly on Monica's side, honestly, for the most part, until this came out. And I'm still in the area of Meredith is still guilty in some way. I don't think it's that big of a deal, though. I know what she's doing, and she's just trying to spread rumors and try to make a storyline for a show that was failing. Let's be honest. Last year, the show sucked. The first couple years were okay, but, you know, last year stunk. So
Wait a second. How dare you?
They were
okay. Season two was only okay.
This is where we're going to go? All right.
Wait, I'm on their side.
No point.
Dude, season one and two.
If you want to say season one was only okay, that's fine. I thought season one was really good, but I can see it was being okay. But season two, how dare you? Sir?
All right, so do you think season four was better than season two?
Yes.
Okay.
No. I actually think it was. Oh, God. I don't know.
How do you attribute that to season three? But do you attribute that to Jen Shah not being here or Monica's presence?
I love that Jen Shah is not on the show anymore. She made me crazy from the beginning. And, you know, the show, we do make fun of it being like the community theater of Housewives or whatever. But Jen was just never even close to being real. You know, she's just the whole like, hi, everybody. Oh, my goodness, I'm Annie. And just like screaming and throwing and like having a fit and then being like, and her fake tears and just all of the, she was just awful. I thought she was awful for Housewives because it's like a Saturday Night Live version of a housewife. Just it's like played by Sherry O'Terry, just losing her fucking mind at the drop of a hat. I could not stand her. And also she was so vile. You know, when we're talking about like, will Monica be able to come back next season? They put up with Jen for three seasons. They'll still bring Jen back when her ass is out of prison. And the way that our prison system works, it'll probably be 2 weeks. And she'll be out probably bringing the girl with the fake blood. What's that girl's name? With the black, the Steve Jobs turtleneck speaking of. Elizabeth.
Theranos.
Theranos. Yes. That was Monster. Who was it? That was Elizabeth Holmes.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Holmes.
Yeah. But I mean, was Monica
Eileen Wuornos. She's bringing Eileen Wuornos onto this show.
Oh my God, don't make me cough. I think it's too late. I think, no, to get back to that question about like, is it because of Monica? I think Monica had a huge part to do with it. I think but I think this season had a great energy about it. Like it was very funny and they were all getting in each other's business. Monica did a great job. I mean, Monica and her mom, that was actually like very riveting. Monica was like very funny and she was chaotic. Also, I'm going to advocate for Angie K. I think that Angie is the most try hard housewife and she tried so hard and she was so bad at like she was so awkward that she became amazing to me. I just love the way she would just try to insert herself. Like even in this, I rewatched the finale and I forgot there was a moment the episode before she like wants to confront Meredith. She's like, Meredith, I would like to say something about these emails. Hold on. Let me wet my whistle before I start saying something to you. I was like, what are you doing wetting your whistle before you confront someone, Angie? Just everything she does cracks me up.
She was exceptional this year, and she started off a little slow. I couldn't stand her last year, honestly. But
I liked her last year, actually.
Of the moments that she tries to insert herself, and they were a lot more prevalent early on in the season. We saw it at the Trixie Motel. Yeah. We talked about it on our show. Like when they're at the bar, the amount of times that she just pops in like over somebody's shoulders, like, what'd you say? And it's like, okay, go away.
But look like a trampoline with eyes.
Yeah. Like she just pops up to like give a rebuttal. Then she's not involved in the conversation, but she seemed, I think episode 3 or 4, she kind of hit her stride. Like she didn't seem as forced. And the scenes with her and her family didn't seem as forced. And we got to see a more genuine side of Angie K. And maybe that's just getting comfortable. Maybe that's being around the show long enough, being around these women long enough. But we definitely saw a different side of her. And I gave her like the comeback player of the year award, because from last year, I really didn't enjoy her last year. She irritated me. I didn't like the forced issues and stuff like that. So to see her be more organic and be more comfortable and kind of find her niche within this group was actually really refreshing. I thought she did a great job this season. So I'm on team Angie K now. As far as like Monica and Meredith and all that stuff, I was on team Monica for the majority of the season. Part of me still slightly is, if we're being honest, just because of how much she delivered, how much she gave us throughout this season. If lover or hater, she was the MVP the entire year. She did a great job. The storyline, as you said, with LD, old Linda, was captivating. And now there's even a bigger part when you're looking at her behavior throughout the year, the stalking, the manipulating, this and that. And you have her mom to compare it to. You're like, oh, well, is this nature versus nurture? It brings up so many different conversations of, is this a tendency that she got from her mom? Is this just Monica and Monica's nuts? I think that it was such a great year for a housewife, but I'm pretty much on the platform of she's a one and done. She's going to be one of the greatest one and dones in history, but probably the best. And I don't see how you can bridge a gap. And I get it. I agree with you in, if Heather can get past it, you know, this would be great TV to watch this play out next year. I just don't see how you can present that to the audience without feeling like it's being force fed to us. Well, because how do you bridge that gap?
Yeah, actually, the question is, will it actually be great TV? If the women finally are like, okay, cynically, we know this will be good for ratings, et cetera. It's good for our job. We'll shoot with her. Will we actually get a terrible season of them? Will it be a whole season of them just like not wanting to talk with her? Will, you know, them trying to avoid her, or like, you know, will there be fake interactions? It could wind up backfiring in our face if we demand Monica back.
Yeah, it could, yeah. Because like that's one of the main issues that we have with a lot of the shows is if you get stuck on one topic the entire season, we're going to get bored, especially if there's no answers. We already know the answer to this one. So if the entire topic next year is all of the women just completely alienating Monica and talking about how much they hate her, we're going to get tired of that. The reason that this season was so good was because we went from one issue, whether it was Lisa Barlow's son and if he's going to Columbia, what does Heather think about this? Does she even get to have an opinion, to Angie K and Sean's rumors? Like, there's so many things going on, and it seems like every episode there was something different that keeps it fresh, that keeps us
without
engaged.
Without it being episodic.
Exactly. And we're still, by the end of the season, we're going through this roller coaster. Like, this was a fun year. And then they give us a great finale. That's a great way to end the year. I don't want to deal with, it's kind of what we're doing in Potomac right now. We keep going back to Potomac, but all we're talking about is whether or not Robin and Juan, what's going on with Juan and his allegations about cheating and everything else that whatever is surrounding it. We're tired of it. We don't want to do the same thing every episode. We want something fresh. So I don't think that Monica here next year is going to allow that.
Yeah, I think it's good, you know, like I was saying about Real Housewives of New York, sometimes it's okay to say goodbye, you know, like you don't have to just keep the same thing going because it was popular that, you know, for a long time. And I think that's kind of the thing with Monica. I'm fine if she's a one and done. I enjoyed her pretty much. I didn't have she is kind of Gen 2.0 with how she just will fly off the handle and go really, really low, really fast. Mm-hmm. But she's also got a more real charismatic side to her than Jen ever showed. So I don't really mind Monica. Like, I don't have a fuck Monica, don't bring her back. I'm not like morally against Monica. I just don't see how more of the same is going to be good. I say switch it up. Now, Salt Lake City does have a really hard time getting new cast members. I mean, they're notoriously bad. I mean, you have places that have a lot of people shooting, you know, like Atlanta, they shoot a lot of things there, in LA or bigger cities. There's more to choose from, I think. But Salt Lake City, I mean, that's just a tall order, you know, and they have tried so many people. And Angie, you know, like you're saying, like Angie's gotten so much more comfortable. I don't think she has at all. I mean, I think that's what I love about her is she's still so awkward and forced, but I think I'm more used to it and I just love it. I just think it's so funny how she's like always reading off a teleprompter, how she doesn't really, she still doesn't get it, but you just kind of get used to certain things because you watch them so much. Mm-hmm. And I just really love her now, but I'm okay with trying it out. trying.
I think
out
that
new
if
ones.
If Monica comes back, I think the producers have to work really hard that by the end of the season the feud is over, because we have a theory, which is that like you have like feuds have like a 2-season arc. The first season is the build up to the feud and the breaking point, which is usually the more riveting part. And like we've seen this on like season 3 of Real Housewives of New York with Bethany and Jill and just a million other feuds. And then you usually have the next season is you're living in the feud and like, how do we bring these two together? How do we find peace? Which is also usually pretty entertaining, but it also wears out its welcome. And the worst are there have been shows where a whole season of feud happens. And like this happened with Shannon and Vicky actually at one point. And then the season ends and the next season comes on and they're still feuding. And you're like, I can't, like, I'm over this feud. Yeah, I don't want, like, get over it, you know? So if they bring back Monica, they've got to wrap up this feud by the end of next season.
Don't you think that's going to be the worry about Jersey 2 this year? I mean, from everything we've been reading, it looks like, you know, half the cast is refusing to film with the other half of the cast. What do you guys think about that, the Jersey stuff that's coming out? What have you guys heard?
We're so dumb with it. I mean, that's like the quintessential teams. And we learned that the hard way last year. We weren't even picking teams. We even said in the beginning of the season, we're not going to bother picking teams. We're not going to steadfast go one way or another. And every comment that we made, it's just like a full comment list of Team Teresa, whatever it might be. And that it's got to be the most toxic fan base out of all of Bravo. And it's absolutely insane. It's crazy to go through, but it's funny because by the end of the year, we loved it. We wanted to embrace it and we would actively try to annoy them. And it's, you know, it's a good time.
Yeah,
but I don't know where they go. And we were hoping they were going to make a ton of changes this year. We were honestly calling for, you know, whatever Teresa wants to do. If you want to give her own little love bubble show out in California, her and Louis can just go live the rest of their days and do whatever the hell they want. And then you get Melissa out of there and maybe you just start fresh. I think they wanted to see, at least in my eyes, I think they wanted to see what Roni looked like this year to see if there was good feedback to the new cast before they made a decision on Jersey. And they might give Jersey this last year. And if they're not going to film together, we're not going to want to watch it, really. Obviously, we still will, but we're not going to want to watch it. And they'll know that by the end of the year. And you'll be able to see the dip in the viewership by the end of the year. And I think they're going to have to make a hard decision. Who do you let go? Who do you keep? And Bravo's going to have to stick their head in the mud,
but like,
essentially.
Intense feuds have been like part of Jersey's DNA since the beginning. Like, this is the one show that like likes to live in that space. So, I mean, I'm ready for it. I think that New Jersey is really, over the past like 6 or 7 years, has been one of the most consistent performers on Bravo. And it sort of always gets overlooked. There's always like a flashier show that comes along. You know, Vanderpump Rules was out, you know, was doing Scandoval while Jersey was doing its season. And Jersey kind of got overlooked from that. And then, you know, right now everyone's talking about Salt Lake City, you know, whereas we're putting together the ballots for the crappies. And, you know, I put something on Instagram like, hey, what are everyone's favorite like moments on Bravo from the past year? And of course, everyone writes like everything from SLC or Vanderpump Rules or Beverly Hills. And people just don't write stuff from Jersey. But like Jersey always has so much stuff. So I hope that these warring factions can get over it, because I feel like it's actually a really good cast. And if they just wind up in this super divided place where Bravo does have to clean house, I think that'd be a shame.
Well, I think that's the risk that we're run, though, is like, at what point will they get over it? You know, we've had the Melissa versus Teresa feud forever, seemingly. And now you have, I think that the risk they're running this year is, from everything I've been seeing, it's Danielle and Jen Aiden are getting into it physically. So are they going to put a lot of pressure on Danielle, a newbie who didn't, you know, she was fine last year. I enjoyed her. Did she necessarily find her stride? I don't know. I don't know if she was like a stellar performer last year, but she was solid. Is it risky to put that much onus on a newcomer? What's up?
I was going to say Danielle and Jennifer Aiden having like a feud based off of a physical fight is actually exactly what that show needs. Like a different kind of feud
between
those two.
It could be
those two nutcases. Yes.
Well, they're kind of...
I mean, that sounds perfect because Danielle was... Everybody was pegging her for being the newest member of Team Teresa. So now that she's in limbo, because I feel like she feels a little scorned because she was thrown under the bus by Jen Aiden. So now all of a sudden she's fighting with somebody else. If she can kind of stand alone and do that and we have a different feud to look forward to, maybe it'll take some of the pressure off the rest of the castmates and we can kind of get back to what Jersey is.
Oh, we'll also have the new feud of Marge versus Jackie. Because those two, that's the typical Bravo, like, we're going to be on the same team. We're going to be each other's allies no matter what. And then Ozempic came along and ruined everything because it looks like they're having Ozempic fights. Like, that's what I've heard that their season is about. And now Teresa has accepted Jackie, and now Jackie and Teresa are going to be like little besties, which is insane. That's insane.
You're getting me excited for Jersey now. I didn't know that was possible.
Maybe it's what it needs. Yeah, this is all stuff that could be potentially what it needs. The only reason I was nervous about Danielle and Jen is because Danielle's a newcomer, and I don't know if it's
ridiculous.
A lot of pressure to put.
She'll be like,
oh my God, how could you do this to me? And it'll be hilarious. And honestly, I'm actually looking forward to a season of Melissa Gorga just living in her truth that she fucking hates Teresa. She's like pretended to be like, oh, you know, like we just want to be there as family. And watching Melissa Gorga just being like, fuck off, Teresa, during the entire last reunion was great. It was like, finally, Melissa is just being Melissa.
But do you think that they can have a show in which they are is there a way that the show is successful when you have the group split so firmly? Like, can they still come up with a formula to entertain
Jersey,
us?
I think we have so much fun with Jersey because we do like the stupid voices, you know? So like, we love it for that reason because everybody's a Muppet to us, you know? So we like it for that. I think a lot of what hurts a Jersey is the fandom because it really, like you said, it does get so toxic. Oh my God, people will come after you. heavily.
Yeah. Death threats.
Really
they
bad.
Called us. We have been on Team Gorga. Apparently we're on their payroll. And then they said we're on Teresa's payroll. I haven't seen any of the money yet, so I'm a little upset about that. But no matter what you say, they will take up arms against you. One way, you can be Team Joe, or you can Team Teresa, or you can be down. We were neutral. We would preface everything with, we don't pick a side here. We think they're both kind of crazy right now. And we would still. The tree stands are the absolute, like, the tree stumps.
A friend to everyone is a friend to no one, Joe.
Dude.
Okay. You know, sometimes you gotta pick a side.
They are.
They're toxic. But I always liked that show. And I have to say, they've always delivered on that show. Even the worst seasons have retroactively been considered amazing by me. I mean, the worst season of that by far was when Teresa went to jail and they tried to do a recast and they recast everybody, right? Like, we all remember that. That was a disaster, but it was kind of amazing. I mean, it gave you Amber and Jim Marchese, who are vile. I mean, those two are vile. And then the twins and one of the twins' husband fucked the mom-in-law. I mean, Santa, do you guys remember all this? I mean, it was just like horrid. It was vile. But thinking back on it, it's like, oh my God, they gave us so much. Icons, you are mother. Season.
Was it season 7?
I think there's something that can be said about the consistency of Jersey. You always know what to expect. I just want to see a show that's more cohesive as far as the castmates go. I'm getting tired of Teresa versus Melissa. If they're not going to remedy that, then just move on from it. Don't bring it up anymore. Let's focus on some new storylines. Let's focus on some new drama.
Yeah.
Maybe that is the beauty of Jen versus Danielle. Maybe that will be the focal point that we need to take our mind off of Teresa versus Melissa, because for all intents and purposes, they're not rectifying the situation. They're not coming back together. We can move past that. So I agree. The consistency with Jersey, you always know what you're going to get. The women do always come prepared. They do their best to deliver a good show. I can't knock them on that. I just need something different this season because I do love this cast. I love this cast. I love the dudes on this show. Like, overall, there's something comforting and familiar when this show comes on TV. And maybe that's because we're from Philly and, you know, Jersey's just down the street and we familiarize with these kinds of people. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but I want to watch a season in which I'm not rolling my eyes because it's Teresa versus Melissa again. I can't do that again.
Well, I think that we've known that forever and we've accepted the fact that they're never going to get back together. It's now like what we're seeing is Melissa finally understands you're never getting back together. Maybe it was the Joe of it all that was kind of standing in there. So now the Joe is.
Yeah.
You think so? Yeah. That's kind of what I think.
Yeah, I think that, like, because, like, in an effort to make it good for Joe and Teresa, she had to play nicey-nicey. Now that Joe is like, fuck my sister, Melissa can just be like, yeah, fuck her. Which, by the way, might be exactly what those two need to become real friends, which is Melissa actually being in her authentic self. I don't know if that's going to really happen. What will be interesting, though, to go back to Salt Lake City, sort of tying back to sort of, like, building off the earlier question of, like, is Bravo going to try to have, like, big, you know, season finales with twists and turns. I'm not sure that Bravo can do that, but I'm interested to see how this might affect other shows. Like, you know, when I look at what's happened on Salt Lake City this season and I look back on the New York reboot, I was not a fan of the New York reboot. Although in retrospect, I like there are things that I do really appreciate about it. Like, I really enjoy the Jessel of it all. Like, it definitely has like some upside. I'm not writing it off. But do we think that New York might come back with some more knives out? Because I really felt like a lot of last season was like, look at us, we're just like fabulous girlfriends in the city living fabulous lives, don't you want to be friends with us? And I think that like second season, may they now be like wanting to kind of go a little harder at each other? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I would say so. I feel like that first season is just kind of feeling each other out and also getting acclimated to the show and having cameras around and, you know, what makes good TV. You have to look back at the game film. You have to sit there and watch the entire season, see how everything played out, what worked, what didn't. Did I hit on this one? Did I not? So I feel like they're going to have a better understanding. As long as they leave the cast as is, and it sounds like maybe Jenna Lyons isn't going to come back, we don't really know what the cast is going to look like. As long as they leave it for the most part untouched, they're going to be more comfortable around each other. So we're going to see more of that, maybe that knives out mentality where, yeah, we're not all buddy-buddy and we're going to the same places all the time. And look at us and look at us living in New York. We're having such a great life. Maybe they will start to fight. And as long as it's organic and it makes sense, and I think that Jessel could be a big part of that because she came into her own by the end of the season, we'll be able to see some good entertainment. That's what we're hoping for. Do I think that's going to happen? Maybe not. Maybe in some way. I don't think that they're going to come full bore and just really get out there for the second season. But that first season, yeah, we're just going to chalk it up as kind of a feel out. And, you know, do we like these personalities? For the most part, I would say yes. And we'll see what the second season looks like. But yeah, we're still very hopeful for that. And I do hope that there is some good organic drama for the second season.
My prediction that Jessel is going to be the biggest villain. Because she is such an asshole. I mean, I think we love, you know, both Ben and I just love her just because she's so ridiculous. And so like, oh my God, our children could touch shoulders with Tom Cruise's children. It's like Tom Cruise's children are in college, you know. But anyway, it's like she's just so out of touch.
I never put that one together.
And she became,
well, she thinks Tom Cruise is going to be at the PTA meetings.
Yeah. And she became,
they have cheese boards there. Of course he's going to be there.
She became kind of a hero.
He loves a good cheese board.
Tom Cruise charcuterie fights with Tom Cruise.
But she became kind of a hero. Scientology overall loves charcuterie. Sorry.
She became a hero later on because the worst people were going up against her and kind of bullying her, which is how you win in Housewives. Like, if everybody's bullying you, then you're automatically going to kind of be the hero for a while. That's just how it is. And so I think she got lucky in a way. And also she was so much herself that she just didn't care. And I think that in a show where not everybody was themselves all the time, it worked. But I think at heart, Jessel is an asshole. She's a funny asshole. But I think that people really did the thing where they just start going so rah-rah for one person that they stopped seeing that this person at their core is kind of an asshole. That's why they're fun. So I can't wait for her villain era. And I think that's going to come up in her next.
It's going to be a huge villain era because she also became so popular at the end. She had a Rolling Stone profile. The other women are not going to stand for that, especially Erin. Erin is like the most jealous person of them all, and she's going to start taking down Jessel in her own boring way. That's the only thing that will make Jessel not the villain, is having Erin go after her again. But I think that Jessel's going to come into season two thinking she's a superstar, and they are going to go nuts.
What do you think, Steele?
I agree with that, and I would love that to transpire because I hated Jessel for the first half of the season. And when she started to come into her own, I love Jessel. I'm a huge Jessel fan. I 100% agree with Ronnie. She's an asshole. We saw her be an asshole to Pavitt multiple times. Then they kind of like chalk it up. We like them together. Let me get that straight. I like Jessel and Pavitt together. I think they complement each other well.
Yeah.
But the way she talks to people is very brash. Like, she's just rough around the edges. And that's a good thing once you got to know her. I think this show's set up to have a solid second season. I think they have all the pieces there to do it. And like a shooter said, like you check the game film, you go back and watch tape. They read the socials. They understand like how things have been working. What did work? What didn't work? Right. They're reading all the comments. Psy made comments during the season while it was airing saying, I promise the food thing's not going to be a recurring thing. She addressed what we were all irritated with because the food thing got really annoying that there's no food anywhere. I'm always hungry, blah, blah, blah. It's annoying. Stop. She addressed it during an episode on Twitter. So they are self-aware. They're going to look back and see what was working, what feuds they tried to start that didn't necessarily land. I think that's going to be a big tell. And how to play the game the right way. What's going to make good TV versus what's going to be annoying and what's too far maybe. But now that their feet are wet and they're ready to go for the second year, like Shooter said, if you bring back this cast, maybe add one newbie in, but I don't want to change things up after only one season. I think give them 2 years, see how this season goes. And then if they're good together, you've got a good show. You've got a good show in the making. If not, you have one more year to try to make some changes in that third season. But I think we're going to see a better season this year. I enjoyed it last year. I saw the makings of a good show. So I'm hopeful you got to continue that.
You got to bring in a new person, and that new person cannot be like an influencer or sort of working generically in fashion. They have to be just like much more interesting, I think, than the people that are there.
Like a CEO or CFO.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I don't love Psy. I think that, like, if you get rid of Psy, I think with Erin, you know, Brynn, I'm very hot and cold about. Sometimes she drives me nuts. Sometimes I'm like, oh, she's actually really good. And, like, there is the potential for the show to just, like, really explode for me, but it's definitely not there. I need a little bit more camp. Like, that's what Salt Lake City was so good at. And I feel like, by the way, with Salt Lake City, going back to it, like another thing that really, really needs to be emphasized about how good this finale was yes, there was a twist. Yes, it was on the back of a great season. Yes, this is a great cast. They all care about each other. But also, production was serving their A game. The music, like the choices for the music were outstanding. The way they decided to tell the story was outstanding. And honestly, it was all so overdramatic. It was all very campy and it was all very ridiculous. And that's what we loved about it. And that's where, like, if we're talking about New York was like trying to be like, yeah, just like be one of the girls with us. Like, we're fabulous. We're doing fabulous things. Like, look at our fabulous lives in New York. Whereas Salt Lake City was not trying to say, look at our fabulous lives. Salt Lake City was like providing full on nighttime soap opera. And I think that is where Salt Lake has really, really just knocked it out of the park all four seasons.
Well, what do you guys expect for the three-part reunion? What are we going to get?
Let's make
from
some
that?
Predictions. Let's wrap this up with some predictions.
Steele and I have gone through it. It seems like Monica, at least in her confessionals in the finale, was sitting there and she had more information. Steele and I think that there's a lot more interactions that happens with
she
this
brought
page.
The burn book.
She's got the Mean Girls burn book and she's ready to roll. I think that there's a lot more interactions between maybe Lisa Barlow, Angie K, Meredith with the actual page. She's probably got more DMs. I want to see to the extent of which she has, because at this point, it seems like she seems pretty confident in it. And we know that nobody's talking to Monica anymore. She better be able to serve at least for the entire three-part reunion, because we talk about reunions all the time and they're always a little too long. There's never enough. You can do it in two parts, maybe in one part. Three parts is crazy, but obviously with that finale, they deserve three parts. I think that we're going to be okay. I just want to see what's going to happen and what you guys think is going to happen from Monica's perspective into the reunion.
Well, I think Monica, at the end of the day, I know this is anticlimactic, but I think Monica has a bunch of nothing. Because Monica, what she brought during the season is like, your husband's gay. I mean, really, if you think about all of the horrible things that Monica supposedly knew and had against everyone, really, she didn't. And that reality Von Teese was just kind of bringing down Jen Shah. One criticism we were getting after the recap was like, oh, my God, you guys don't realize that account had been scrubbed and there, you know, all this other stuff was said about. But what? Where are the screenshots of all of this horrible stuff that she supposedly said? I mean, there was obviously the Shrek stuff, but that was stuff that Jen said about Heather. And then there was her saying Whitney is a swinger, which I don't think anybody I don't think there's a person watching the show that didn't think that watching them in their first two seasons anyway. Yeah. Like when they're on the party bus with the stripper pole and all of their friends who are like Whitney lookalikes are like, oh my God, they're all getting wasted and doing shots off each other. It's like, yeah. So I don't know that she really ever had a whole lot. So I think she's going to be a lot of nothing. And I think that Heather's black eye is going to be caused by roughhousing when they were wasted. Making out, putting their boobies up against the glass and all that stuff that they were doing in that final episode.
I also think my prediction is that Meredith and Angie will bury the hatchet. And I think that the way they're going to be able to do it is that they're going to blame Monica. They're going to say that Monica was pitting them against each other. Whether or not that's true is besides the point. It's just going to be an easy way for them to get out of this tension. So I think that they are, I think Angie actually really wants to be Meredith's friend. And so I think that she is going to do a whole thing of like, I realize now that Monica was putting me against you and there's no reason for us to be fighting. And that's true, by the way, because if you look back at the origins of their feud, it was based off of almost entirely nothing. Like, I don't even know. It was like a passing comment in the finale last season. So my prediction is the two of them are going to move forward.
Okay.
My prediction is that burn book is stacked with DMs from the cast members. They're interacting with the account, like a story that's posted. Totally wishful thinking.
I hope you're right.
I do too, because if there's just stacks and stacks of Lisa Barlow commenting on a funny story that Reality Von T's posted that's dragging Meredith or dragging Angie or dragging somebody in the group, and her replying like, oh my God, this totally happened, would be really, really funny. I want that burn book to come through. I get so bummed out when we get these bedazzled notebooks, these big manila folders where they put so much time and effort on how they look, but then they pull out the receipts and you're like, damn it, that's really not anything. So look, Monica has delivered up until this point. She is also a certified legitimate stalker. So she definitely has dirt on people. She had the dirt for the account on Jen. Her goal with the account was to take down Jen Shaw. Mission accomplished. Okay. I don't know if she's the reason that she went to prison, but regardless, I'm wishful thinking still. So if she can do that, who's to say that she doesn't have more shit on the other ladies? And if she does, and then she lights the burn book on fire and walks off stage and no one hears from her again, that's my goal. That's what I want to happen.
Well, I think she'll have a lot of stuff, but I want that Barlow.
God, you are delusional.
I love it. I hope you are totally correct, because I want,
guys,
I mean,
come on, it would be so good.
I think it would be good too. And I hope that you're correct. I hope that she really burns the house down, because all of them, it's fishy at this point with everybody. They've already accused Meredith of all this stuff. Last year, it was Angie H's husband. They forgave her. And Heather is fishy, too, because Heather's still friends with Tanisha. I mean, what the hell? Like, Tanisha is out of the closet. And if all of these DMs and stuff that have been released over the course of the week, which we're probably running out of time, but another time. But all of those that have been released proves that she's keeping someone who is totally doing the same thing Monica was. I don't understand it. So I think that's pretty fishy,
well,
too.
I feel like that just goes to show you that there could be some hope for Monica staying on the show. If Heather's going to be able to forgive Tanisha, why? Because she gave her the DMs that made the show even better. I mean, I guess that's good enough to still be someone's friend or hairdresser.
Tanisha came clean about it. So that's why it's like, you know, you apologize, so that's okay. You know,
I think Tanisha saw
an opportunity to get on TV, and Tanisha took that opportunity to get herself on TV. That's what happened there. She didn't have like a weird moment of where her conscience was just like too much to bear. She couldn't hold on to this secret any longer. She felt this moment to be like, ooh, here's my moment. I'm going to blow up everything and tell her that Monica's the one behind this. I'm going to get my 15 minutes of fame. I think that everybody that's tagging along for this that is not a member of the show is using it to their advantage to get their face in the limelight and profit off of this somehow. I'm firmly under that belief with both Tanisha and Marulo and whoever else is on the Shaw squad.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, absolutely.
We'll see. We've got a month left of it. Guys, it was so good to meet you and finally get to talk to you. Thank you so much.
It was a blast.
Especially you, Shoot Scoot Magoot.
See?
There you go.
So much fun.
What a delight.
You got it.
Yeah, you got it. Perfect.
yeah, thanks for getting the ball rolling on this, and we'll have to do it again.
Absolutely. Yeah, whenever you guys want to.
Let's subscribe to Brav Bros. They're on Instagram. They're on everywhere you get your podcasts. Their first live show is coming up January 25th in New York City. It's going to be, what is Green Room? What's the number after Green Room?
Green Room 42.
So go get your tickets there. We have the Golden Crappies on February 17th in LA at the Palace Theater. So get your tickets for that one. And let's talk again.
Yeah, let's do
it. It was really good to meet you guys.
Yeah, great to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, bros.
Bye. Honorary bros.
Yeah. Bye. Honorary bros.
Watch What Crappens would like to thank its premium sponsors.
Ain't no thing like Allison King.
Ashley Savoni, she don't take no baloney.
Strolling the Park with Caitlin Clark.
She's not just a Sheila, she's a Daniela.
Itchels.
Erin McNicholas, she don't miss no trickolas.
She's never scary, it's the Green Fairy.
Jamie, she has no last namey.
Hava Nagila Weber.
Know Your Worth with Jason Kurth.
She's the wind beneath our Jennifer Wing.
Sip some scotch with Jessica Trott.
She's always supplying, it's Kelly Ryan.
Kristen the Piston Anderson.
Let's give a kisserino to Lisa Lino.
Megan Berg, you can't have a burger without the Berg.
The Bay Area Betches, Betches.
And our super premium sponsors.
Somebody get us 10 cc's of Betsy MD.
We're taking the gold with Brenda Silva.
Let's get real with Caitlin O'Neill.
Don't get salty with Christine Pepper.
Can't have a meal without the Emily Sides.
Nobody holds a candle to Jamie Kendall.
She's not harsh, she's Jill Hirsch.
She's a little bit loony, Junie.
My favorite Murdo, Karen McMurdo.
We love him madly, it's Kyle Pod Chadley.
Let's go on a bender with Lauren Fender.
We want to hang with Liz Lang.
The incredible edible Matthews sisters.
Give him hell, Miss Noel.
She's the queen bee, it's Sarah Lemke.
Shannon, out of a cannon, Anthony.
Let's take off with Tamla Plain.
She's quite the catch, it's Victoria Kotchett.
She ain't no shrinking Violet Kutar. We love you guys.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Watch What Crappens ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.